Welcome back to Force and Spike. You've got Justin on the East Coast, Chris out here on the West Coast. Justin, how are you doing this very warm evening for me? It got up to 108 degrees today here in sunny California. Oh, man.
That's really hot. I'm doing really well. I already told you yesterday that we had a little emergency. We found out my daughter was allergic to cashews.
The hard way.
Yeah, the hard way. Yeah. The hard way. So we, she's fine, but we spent, a little time in the emergency room yesterday. And now, my daughter has an EpiPen and, where she's going to get some allergy testing to see if there's, anything else, that she might be allergic. Usually food allergies come in, you know, groups. When you've got one, you've got more than one. They're like, it's
just you got to get her one of those, medic alert, you know, bracelets or like something. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, well, she has medical history now. People are like, does she have any allergies? It's like cashews. She is allergic to cashews.
Yeah. Do you think you will ever give her any nut ever again? Any tree nut?
So she drinks almond milk every day.
Okay.
So, she drinks almond milk. We have peanut butter all the time.
I love peanut butter.
Yeah. So, and she's never had a reaction to peanut butter. And, there've been multiple holidays now. I make a sweet potato casserole that has pecans in it and she loves it actually. And she has never had a reaction to pecans. But we need see, like, I don't know if maybe she could be allergic to like hazelnuts. And I just wouldn't know. But there's a lot of stuff. But
everything's fine now. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's fine now. And I'm just like, the thing is, my stepdad, Dennis, loves cashews and, they're coming for Thanksgiving and he usually brings out like a bag of cashews on the plane. I said, don't bring any cashews with you.
Yeah. Don't bring any. Yeah. Well, I'm sure everything will be fine. I'm glad you guys overcame that, really scary moment.
It was scary for, there was like a 20 to 30 minute period. I was like worried about my daughter's life.
Yeah, no, I get it. Well,
but we're good.
We're good. This is actually a happy day for me. I Justin Sherman, I got to play in a paper Magic tournament over the weekend. Like, how awesome is that?
I'm so envious.
Yeah, are you jealous?
I would love to play some paper Magic. If I had something to get ready for, I would spend some money on the stuff to play. Like,
get ready for, just go like look at the schedules for the shops in a 30-mile radius of you and see if anyone's running tournaments right now, man, because it's starting to happen. These LGSs need that support. They're certainly not getting it from WotC. the tournament was a just for fun modern tournament, Swiss style, 5 rounds, cut to top 8. And it was not part of any kind of qualifier. It was just a shop putting on a tournament. So that was super fun. Folks just showed up.
Was it sanctioned?
It was not sanctioned. No.
Okay.
Folks just showed up with decks they wanted to play. People just showed up with their favorite decks, right? So like, how fun is that?
That's rad.
The shop put up like the gauntlet, and I think the most copies of any one deck were 3. There were 3 Is It Prowess decks in the field of 22, and everything else was kind of like a 1 or 2 of copy.
So, 1 or 2 of, oh man, that's the Wild West. Super. That's great. That's modern. West. That's modern though. And I think, that's one of the things that like people tend to love and hate about modern, is how diverse the field is. It makes control decks really hard to play. So they're all like these hyper aggressive decks or really really fast combo decks or really disruptive control decks. Like most of the control decks have like 6 to 8 like Thoughtseize variants in them, right? You're just trying to pick your opponent's hand apart and then like lock the game up with something sweet.
Friday night, I got the go ahead to go to this thing. Annie was like, yeah, go play Magic. Like, you haven't done that in literally forever. Like, go play. So I'm like really doing the whole like, what cards do I own situation? Like, what cards do I own for the new meta? And I had two deck options. We'll talk about them in a second. But not just, it wasn't just me that is aware. I'm not the only person aware of this podcast that top aided. This was a local tournament for me. Not just one other, but two other Forcing Spike listeners made the top eight. So I want to give some shout outs here. I want to give some shout outs to my boy, Rogaribe, who made the top eight yesterday. And and listener and member of the Discord, AltHouse2323, made the top eight with Is It Prowess. So Rogelio made it with Blue White Ragavan Control. So Jeskai Monkey. AltHouse made it.
It's a stone blade, Monkey Blade.
Yeah, Monkey Blade. There you go. AltHouse made it with an incomplete version of Is It Prowess. We were talking about how, so like there were like three of copies, or I only had like one Murktide Regent, so I just threw it in there, like sort of situation. But they got there with they got to the top eight with it. So hey,
wow,
yeah,
that's great.
And I was rocking Boomer Bots yesterday. That's what I named my deck when I filled out a physical deck registration form, and I needed
Boomer Bots.
So yeah, Boomer Bots got there. Old school, actual affinity made it into the top eight yesterday. So I'm happy to talk about it. I'm thrilled. Like it was just such a fun experience, and it feels so good to be back and playing Magic. And it really is about talking to the people you haven't, like, I hadn't seen those guys. Like, it was my local play group that was there, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, guys I haven't seen in a year and a half, and I'm just
guys you always see, like when you would walk into like the PPTQs, like these were the guys that you
were there all the time.
You saw every single time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got paired against two dudes that like I hadn't seen in like forever, and like during the sideboard, you know, hey man, what's new with you? Oh, by the way, I'm actually a dad now. Like that sort of thing was like just crazy. Like,
oh man, how cool!
So. Very fun stuff. Talking and I cannot stress, just talking to your opponents like after the game. I missed it so much. Like just learning about like mistakes, learning what you could do better, etc. Like that part is just so much of what makes this game great.
It is. It's really hard to go back and like watch your arena games or your MTGO games, I feel like, and look for the mistakes you made. But it is so much easier to in paper, like when there's like a big decision moment, you can be like, okay, I'm going to commit that to memory. And then afterward you can like go over what you were thinking with your opponent and like have a much more human experience.
Right. Like you can actually have fun. Like you can be competitive and have a good time. What a thought, you know? You don't have to grind out every single edge, and you can still have a great time playing this game. I have an example of that in the top eight, but before I get to that, should I do a tournament report? Like, should I just tell you what the matchups were and how the deck played and why I was playing that deck in the first place? Like, would you like to hear these things or?
So tell me just like, what is Boomer Bots?
Okay. So robots are back. This little card, you might've heard of it, called Urza Saga, is really good. Turns out that's a good Magic card. I don't think it is super bannable busted, just to be clear. I'll state this now, and if the listeners want to challenge me on that, we can go into an episode about it. But Urza Saga and Thought Monitor have brought actual affinity back into the fold here, and the reason is the deck is no longer like power out your hand with Springleaf Drums and Mox Opals. You can't do that anymore because Mox Opals banned. It's less of an aggro deck, and it is way more of a mid-range swarm strategy where like you're going wide and tall at the same time, but you're not necessarily like using spells to kill creatures or to deny resources from your opponents. The fact that your board has just expanded horizontally so quickly is that if the format at all is you need to turn guys sideways to win, you're going to have roadblocks every single step of the way for your opponents. And you're just going to be able to sit there and grow tall with constructs, grow wide with thought monitors, drawing more creatures, etc., until you've hit a critical mass on height with your constructs getting very big. You go get a Shadow Spear from your Urza Saga Chapter 3 trigger, attach it to a construct, +1/+1, trample, lifelink, I attack you for a million and I win.
Yeah, and you swing for the fences. That's right.
Or you throw it onto an Ink Moth Nexus or something like that. Or if you've gone wide, you go get the signal pest with your construct or with your Urza Saga trigger, and then you just like go and you turn all your guys sideways and you just end the game that way too, right? There are lots of things you can just wait around for to happen. And by the way, if you do get the nutty opening hand where you can, you know, do a turn two construct build, to do that, you need like a Memnite, an Ornithopter, a Springleaf Drum, and Urza Saga. It's a three card combo to get a turn two activation on Urza Saga. But that is still pretty nutty, and you can just start turning guys sideways right away. And like you can still have that path to aggro. The reason I picked this build I can post my deck list in the Discord. I actually already have. If you guys want to go see my deck registration list is available in the Modern channel. You can kind of see the 75 there. I took a build that maximized the Thought Monitors and the Emery Lurker of the Locks instead of the build that maximizes Thought Monitors and Thought Cast. My rationale with Emery is it was another body for Springleaf Drum. You could get it out on turn one pretty consistently since it actually does have affinity for artifacts. And being able to do things like recur an Aether Spellbomb from your graveyard to just get things out of the way to have your big guys attack is huge. Recurring a Welding Jar to give someone regenerative shield every single turn is absolutely huge. And
yeah, I imagine the Aether Spellbomb being able to whittle away your opponent's construct tokens was pretty meaningful. If I don't know if it ever came up, but that's like that sounds something that could be game breaking.
Yeah, things similar to it came up. Germ tokens are everywhere too right now because Stoneblade is such a thing. All of those artifacts that kill you in Stoneblade are just germ tokens. So Spellbomb just kills something. Notably, I learned this during the tournament. It says target creature, not target permanent. I was in a situation where I needed to kill an Ensnaring Bridge, and I was like, uh-oh. Nope. So I fetched my Spellbomb instead of the Shadow Sphere because I couldn't attack. And then I read the card, and I was like, wait, this only bounces creatures. But that's okay. I got there. We'll talk about it. Anyway, Emery just gave you so much depth, and it basically is drawing four cards, like once it goes onto the battlefield, because Emery is not the biggest threat you've likely rolled out on turn one or two, which is just insane. So it sits there, and instead of like Steel Overseer being a lightning bolt target or a lightning bolt rod in the old affinity, Emery just draws you four cards effectively, and they got to kill the other thing that's going to kill them. They can't deal with Emery. And Emery just goes and gets something out of your graveyard. Like, I Emeryed into a Thought Monitor on turn two. Right? Like, turn one Emery, turn two Thought Monitor, like, was absolutely nuts. You know, I'm refilling my hand. Like,
that sounds really strong.
It's really strong. Wow. So I was on this build. It was the Thought Monitor, Urza Saga, and Emery brings really cool tech to the affinity list. And my package for Urza Saga's third chapter was Shadow Spear, Aether Spellbomb, Ginger Brute. Just to be another creature they can get through, like an evasion creature.
Unblockable, right? So like you could put a Nettle Cyst on him
unblockable by non-haste creatures.
Yeah.
You can get the Nettle Cyst, get him through if you need to. And that's just if you need the creature. And a Pythian Needle, because you can call Stoneblade. You can call Karn Liberated. You can call anything with the activated ability that you don't want to have to deal with is a ripe target for Pythian Needle. So
powerful.
Yeah. Pretty good. And then if you happen to like drop that Urza Saga because you just have to play a land like on turn one or two and you're not able to make your constructs, the third chapter could just go get a Springleaf Drum and effectively be a land replacement. So while Saga cannot get lands, it can get Springleaf Drum, and you've got the creatures to just turn that into your land that you needed. So
very nice. Very nice. Did you play Emery? Did you play, was Emery your only legendary creature?
Emery was the only creature, so I did not roll out the Mox Embers. There aren't very many. I mean, there aren't very many creatures that people have discovered that can do this. So Embers not being seen in the lists. I should talk about the other version of the deck that's rolling around just so that people know what's out there. There are versions of the deck that run the actual like affinity suite where like almost every creature in the deck has affinity. You've got Frogmites, Mirror Enforcers, and Sojourner's Companions in it. They run all the artifact lands. They run. They don't run the Arcbound Ravager like I did. They don't run the Signal Pest like I did. Part of the reason I ran those cards is because I have experience with those cards, and people haven't played against them in a while. So I figured I could get a little bit of an edge by like doing a throwback situation. The strategy with the actual affinity build is to throw up your hand as soon as possible. Dodge anything that lets you not play small creatures. So you can dodge Chalice of the Void. You can dodge Eidolon of Great Rebel triggers, things like that. Because your creature's converted mana cost is higher than the cost you're actually paying for it.
Sure.
And you're going very wide and you're just reloading with Thought Cast and Thought Monitor. Like, you've got four Thought Cast, four Thought Monitor. You're going to be drawing two extra cards like every third turn, if not more frequently than that. Like, so that's just, yeah, free 2/2 is whatever, but like two free 2/2s and two free 4/4s by turn three is really good too. Like, that's a lot of stuff for them to have to deal with. But I also think you have less outs on that version. So today, right now, I'm a little bit more on the, like, there are five different ways I can kill you. Which way is this hand going to let me do that? Kind of affinity build. Really exciting.
Very cool.
Yeah. Really exciting. It was five rounds. Round one was against, Turbo Mill. So basically the guy was trying to mill me out by turn three or four. I got around it by getting very lucky with an Urza Saga in game one. I got the nutty Urza Saga, hand. So I was able to get two constructs by turn three and just start turning guys sideways. And then game two, he got me with an Ensnaring Bridge and I got incredibly lucky with the top deck Wear Tear. Like, it was very, very lucky.
Very nice.
So that was in my sideboard. I actually didn't even know what I was going to Wear Tear. I just figured the blue deck's going to bring in something that I do not want to see around at some point. So I had Wear Tear in the build. He had there was a Wear Tear in my graveyard, but there was also a Spellskite in my graveyard, and my opponent was more worried about multiple Spellskites being in the deck. So he Surgical Extraction Spellskite. I run it as a one of.
Oh my gosh.
So he only got the one. And then the very next turn, I untapped, popped the Aether Spell Bomb that I had fetched for in error because I thought it would get rid of the Ensnaring Bridge. Drew a land, drew my natural card for the turn, and it was the Wear Tear that I needed to blow up the Ensnaring Bridge.
Oh,
and
man.
I was like, woo.
Good story.
Yeah.
Good story. I like that.
Well, the other plan is to hope he never goes down to zero cards in hands, because I can then attack with Ornithopters and then fast equip like a Cranial Plating to try to get around the Ensnaring Bridge. But
sure.
Anyway, round two was a loss. I played against Luris Prowess. So it was Mono Red Prowess with Luris in the sideboard. The white mana was just for Luris. There was no other white cards in the deck. It's really hard to beat a Mishra's Bauble every turn again in the Prowess deck. So they would just
Sure. So that's an extra draw and an extra prowess trigger every turn.
Yeah. So between that and then the Dragon's Rage Channeler getting Surveil every time, I believe an instant or sorcery was cast, like, my opponent just always had the answers. Ooh, and yeah, it was an easy 2-1 victory for them, I would say. Like, I was not ready for that matchup, running no interaction on the main board. Round three was a win. It was against white, black, greed. Is it greed? Is that the ephemerate combo?
It's grief.
Grief. Okay. Yeah. So this opponent, you actually explain the deck. You know this deck. You go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, so it's just a deck that uses ephemerate, and there's another one mana black card that brings something back when it dies from Zendikar Rising. Remember the name, but it uses some one mana tricks and grief to kind of pick your opponent's hand apart on turn one, and then after you've crippled them, the turn two you Stoneforge Mystic up whatever the most appropriate piece of equipment is, whether it be Caldra Complete, Batterskull, or your sword of choice. It's usually the package is people will pick either Sword of Feast and Famine or Sword of Fire and Ice. In the grief decks, it's usually Sword of Fire and Ice. And you just, you cripple them with grief and then you pick the right equipment to try to win the game with your Stoneforge Mystic. It can be, especially on the play, if they get to, Thought Seize you three times, and then resolve their Stoneforge Mystic.
So I got very lucky on the die roll. I won the die roll. Unknown opponent, right? So I go first. I'm on affinity. Great. My hand was something like a couple zero drops and a Springleaf Drum and nothing else too fancy. I dumped my I dumped everything that could be played and said, go. My opponent turn one fetches a swamp, then plays Inquisition of Kozilek. The only thing left in my hand was an Inkmoth Nexus, an Urza Saga, and a Thought Monitor. So the Inquisition blanks.
Wow.
And I got incredibly lucky, like, that was the situation at hand. Next turn, I top deck Cranial Plating, play it immediately, thinking that this is not going to stay in my hand. Sure enough, then Thought seizes me the next turn. He gets the Thought Monitor, but there's still only two lands in my hand. And meanwhile, I've got an Urza Saga on the field, two constructs, a Cranial Plating. Let's go. Turn three, I go fetch the Shadow Spear, turn my guy sideways, I get the game, right? Like, I'm okay. Yeah. Like, I think it might have been a turn four kill, but I'm like, but at this point, I only saw an Inquisition and I only saw a Thought Seize. Like, that's all I saw from my opponent was that they had white mana and they were playing like these two like hand disruption spells.
Yes. I mean, so you kind of know what they're doing at that point.
No, like, I'm dumb. Like, I didn't know what this deck was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know
okay.
what was going on.
All right. Well, there you go.
Game two. They start doing their thing, you know, they ephemerate grief, they start like playing guys with Stoneforge Mystic, etc. I did the go tall strategy. I was talking about this deck wins by going tall or going wide and just waiting out your opponent, and my opponent could not attack into me because I had like 9/9 constructs, like three of them just sitting on the battlefield, and so I just got to sit there. Go ahead.
Did he ever fetch Caldera Complete? He did,
but I had Shadow Spear as well. So Shadow Spear can turn off Cauldron's Complete indestructibility. So I had a Shadow Spear just sitting there waiting. I couldn't attack with the Shadow Spear because the Cauldron Complete had First Strike.
So, well, it's First Strike, and when it deals damage to a creature, you exile it.
Correct, yeah. So yeah. I don't know if my opponent didn't figure out you could just attack with the three, and then no, he only had one and I had three, but I think if all three blocked, he exiles all three at the same time, right?
No, it doesn't, or
it's not, there's no trample.
It does not have trample, so he doesn't get to modify the damage assignment.
Okay. So my opponent just sat there. Like, I'm not sure why they just sat there. And I just waited to equip a Nettlecyst to my Ornithopter and get the game. Like, I kind of just sat there. Yeah. It was big and scary. And the Nettlecyst ended up getting it on the Ornithopter.
Man.
That was round three. Round four was against my friend Navdeep. He was on Burn. Good old Boros Burn. And he just wrecked me. Like, just completely, like, you know, 0-2 for me in that matchup.
Oh, man.
He came tuned for creature matchups. So he was running, what is it? The two red spells, like red, landfall. It's one damage if you don't have landfall, three damage if you do, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Three damage to the creature and three damage to its controller. Searing Blaze.
Thank you. So he had the Searing Blaze's main decked. And then, like, in game two, he was bringing in the Shattering Smash the Smithereens, like, as well. So, like, I just couldn't get a foothold. Like, and I, even though I drew two Etch Champions in game two, he was able to burn me out. Like, he was able to go, like, untap, bolt. Okay, you're dead. Like, that sort of situation.
So, sure, yeah. When against burn, when you get down to, like, six, you're just, like, the alarms are going off. You're at DEFCON 1. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you're an inch from death.
So at this point, I'm like, well, I'm 2-2. I'm dead for top eight, right? Like, this is just the way it's going to be. So many of the players that were on the slower, like, mid-rangey control decks were so out of shape with, like, going quickly that there were
just actions. Yeah.
There were so many draws in the tournament, Justin. Like, oh, my God. Like, so many players had just drawn to each other. And I was looking at my opponents. That my losses were against two undefeated players. And I was like, oh, okay. So, like,
oh, so you had really good tiebreakers.
And game five was against my buddy Chase. He was on Mono Blue Tron. I didn't know he was on Mono Blue Tron. So game one was very interesting. He never showed me an island. He only showed me a turn three Tron. So, like, I immediately go and fetch a Pythian Needle, like, with my Urza Saga, like, chapter three, and say Karn Liberated and just hope that I got it right. Like, I don't know what Tron he's on.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
sure.
And I was able to just attack him and win that game. Then turn game two, He had a very unfortunate misplay where he forgot about Cranial Plating's fast equip ability. So I had a Cranial Plating on an Ornithopter and I animated an Ink Moth Nexus. And I attacked with both with the plating on Ornithopter. He went to go dismember my Ornithopter. And then I just fast equipped the Cranial Plating onto the Ink Moth Nexus to get it. Like, it was just a pretty unfortunate misplay.
Yeah, just a...
Well, if anyone's looking to play Affinity, do not equip the Cranial Plating to the creature you want the Cranial Plating on. make your opponent.
Yeah.
Well, he took 4 and then took the poison damage. And I was like, it wasn't lethal poison. It was like 5 poison or something like that. But I was like, sure. Chase, come on, dude. You just took 4 to prevent 1 damage and took 5 poison. This is not okay. He knew exactly what happened as soon as he did it.
Oh yeah, 5 poison is 10 damage.
Yeah,
like that's...
He was like, and I was like, yeah, it's fine. So got that game, anxiously awaited tiebreakers, and came in 6th place in the Swiss rounds. So I was live for top 8 and went into it. Got paired against Navdeep again. Got paired against the Burn deck. Here's something I learned about Affinity though. Like, I lost this match. I'll just say it right now. Like, I lost this match. Game 3, Navdeep was able to untap and do 12 damage to me in one turn. And I was just like, okay, like, that's fair. Like, that's what Bird does. Whatever. I'm not mad about it.
He did it.
Yep. Game 1, though, was one for the ages. Like, game 1, Navdeep, turn 2, drops a Eidolon of Great Revel onto the battlefield. And I'm looking at my hand, and I'm just like, everything in my hand costs less. Like, there's nothing in my deck except Thought Monitor that costs like more than 3. So I basically can't play any spells anymore. Luckily I figured out, wait, Affinity can now make creatures without playing spells. I was able to get 3 constructs on the board without ever taking a point of damage from Eidolon of the Great Revel in game 1. So
I should just made 3 3-3s. That'll
I made a bunch of 3-3s, fetched the spear when I could. When I fetched the spear, when I could equip it in the same turn, and then like attacked and gained like 10 life in like one turn. It was like,
oh man.
Okay, you're at 15. No, now you're at 5, and I'm at 12. Like, now I'm at 15. Like that situation. And then I just rolled out like my blockers, because Navdeep was down to like 1 card in hand. I rolled out my blockers. Anyway, long story short, lost that match. Had a great time. This was a very loose tournament report for anyone who listened to it, but I hope it brought back memories of having fun playing in tournaments, because man, it sure was fun.
It sounds great, man. I'm jealous. I'm looking forward to it.
Go if you can. Go if you can.
Yeah. It's sometimes it is difficult for me to get away. But I am eagerly awaiting PAX Unplugged this year. It's great because it's going to be, you know, normal, and Wizards is usually doing whatever their experimental product is like what's going on. So I played like Ultimate Masters at PAX Unplugged. I've played Mystery Booster at PAX Unplugged. So I am really looking forward to like whatever their next like weird thing is. Honestly, even if it was Modern Horizons 2 limited, I'm here for it. I'm looking forward to playing some more paper magic. My local shop is drafting a lot right now, and I just it's hard for me to carve out the like 4 or 5 hours on a weeknight to draft. They don't do anything
on a weekend.
They just have Commander on the weekends, and that's not
where
it doesn't get my competitive juices flowing.
No, they're doing another one at my local shop on the 31st. So I already asked Annie, like, hey, can I go do this? And she's like, tentatively, yes.
There you go. That's a great first step.
Well, when we come back, we're going to actually have our first reactions to Forgotten Realms on Arena, where we've both been playing quite a bit of Sealed and are limited, I should say. And I have thoughts. They're good thoughts, but I'm bad at this. Like, so we'll get into that in just a few minutes here. Justin, as you trudge through the sewers of Baldur's Gate, it dawns on you. Where are all the rats? What do?
You
You search for traps, right?
You search for traps.
You search for traps. Justin Sherman, holy shit. Forgotten Realms, the Dungeons & Dragons Magic set. Magic, originally the game that was designed to be played in between turns of Dungeons & Dragons. We have come full circle. How are you feeling about this on an emotional level and then a spiky, I want to win games level?
Emotionally, I have played... Man, I don't know how much I've played. Let me open my Untapped.
Wait, that's the spike level. No, like emotionally, like how do you like, do you like the set or not?
I just want to be able to tell you like how many drafts I've done, because the set's been only been out a couple days and I've done a lot of drafts.
I've played Boomer Robots, but Justin is a Boomer Robot, everybody.
I am a Boomer Robot. So current set. So I'm currently 5%. Okay, so this weekend I have done 8 drafts.
Okay.
And I'm 18-15 in matches, so yeah, so-so. But 55% is not bad for the opening weekend in Platinum. It is a blast. So I feel it is so satisfying to just like pick which like room I'm going to go in my dungeon next and like just watch the 20 sided die like roll up onto the screen.
Yeah. Oh man.
I've had a really frustrating time with the like random side of things. None of which has to do with like dice rolling. I just feel like I've been drawing like a lot of stuck on 3 lands forever, and I draw nothing but lands kind of situations this weekend. But by and large, the set feels good. It's not powerful, which is great, because I think instead of like the flavor and the weird Dungeons and Dragons-y mechanics, like the venture and the 20 sided dice, instead of that being, it's just not overshadowed by like a couple individually powerful cards in the set. Instead, there's no individual card in the set to talk about, but like the mechanics are really the highlight and the gameplay just feels super, super good.
Yeah. So this is a home run for any like Vorthoses out there. Like this set in Limited does such a good job making you role play, making you pick what character are you going to be, what is your plan going to be as this game progresses, and then sticking to it, right? Like, what is my deck good at, what is my character good at? And you know, you and I have had an episode that was called Every Game is a Story, and you know, it's about that concept's about having a plan and envisioning before you take the action. Well, how will this play out? And what is it set up for me in the future if I make these plays? And I feel like this set does a very good job illustrating that, because, man, like I've got this white red kind of like warrior barbarian deck that I've got drafted right now. And you just think through the mechanics, and as you play the game, it feels like I'm playing that character. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. I have found myself, if you want to get spiky for a second,
sure.
I feel like the black cards are really good. Black has a lot of really good early creatures that interact well with treasure and the adventure mechanic. I have found myself drafting like Mardu colors, which I guess is what I did a lot of in Strixhaven too, but I've had a really good time drafting black white venture decks and black red treasure decks.
Sure.
Both of those being like primarily black. Red I actually don't feel like has a ton of really good cards. White is fine. Blue and green seem okay, but I really I really think black is super strong.
I've done a handful of sealeds this weekend, and I feel like no matter what I open, like, and you look at your rares, right? Like, you're playing sealed, you look at what rares did you get. Like, that's kind of the game. But no matter what colors those rares are in, I go and look at my black cards. And more often than not, I have done the black something plus whatever my rares were. Like, and I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah.
Black is very deep in this set, as it should be, in my opinion. You know, that's the color of monsters. It's the color of rogues. It's the color of going into the dungeon. And they've definitely picked up on that. Like, white and black, for me, feel like the base colors of this set. Am I off base there?
I don't think so. I think they are the, like, so I feel like so many of your adventures are your good versus evil adventures, right? And I feel like white and black really shine in the set. I don't think that, like, the blue and red, like, dice rolling stuff, I don't think is, like, really, they had to be really careful with it because they couldn't make it so strong, like, that the randomness of the die roll had an incredible effect on the game.
I think it had a marginal effect. My first deck in this format was the dice roll deck. It was a sealed event, and it was fine. Like, I got like 4 wins with it. It was whatever. Like, I'm not like, that's not 4 and 3 is not like something to write home about. But, you know, when it came together, it felt pretty fine.
Yeah, winning record's a winning record.
Yeah.
I really like the black red uncommon that powers up your guys for playing them with treasures, and it makes a treasure is really good. Like, there was one game where I went that into the hill giant that rolls for treasures. So it was like second turn.
When it enters,
like,
the battlefield, you get to roll for treasures. That's
no, it's when it attacks. Oh, so I was on the play. I went like second turn that guy, third turn the dice rolling treasure making hill giant. On my fourth turn, I attacked and I got 2 treasures, and my opponent, like, I think he took the damage because he just played a 3-3 or something. And I played a red dragon the following turn. And then the next turn, I played a land, attacked again, hit 2 treasures again, and played a black dragon, and my opponent scooped. Like, it was. Some of the stuff that you can do with the treasure deck is pretty silly.
Yeah, treasure is a mechanic I'm really glad they've kept around, honestly. Like, I was I had another sealed deck where it was a bug sealed deck. I got the mythic, I got the planeswalkers. I got the green planeswalker and the blue planeswalker in my packs.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, how am I going to make this work, because everything in blue and green is double blue, double green. And then I went and looked at my black cards and they all made treasures. And I was like, oh, this is how I make it work. So I just played a bunch of black stuff. And then, like, I had my top end that all had double, you know, color costs. And I did okay. It was a 5 win deck. I lost a couple games that are definitely due to, like, my skill, not because the deck was bad.
Sure.
But
that's the thing.
Yeah. Well, sure. But, Some of the stuff is very doable. And black is interesting that they put the color fixing in black. I just think it's really interesting that they did that. It's not something you see every day.
Yeah. So black red, I played against an opponent who played like a black red, like 5 color deck. And he played like, I can't remember what the sequence was. It was like the second turn he played the treasure guy, and the third turn he played the gray ogre that makes a treasure. And on his like fourth turn, he plays like a plains or something. And I was like, what is this guy doing? And then, the next turn he played Tiamat and went and got, like a black dragon, a red dragon, and the green uncommon, like 4/2, where when you play a land at the end of your turn, if you played a land, like it, you venture, and he just he killed me. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So it is. I think it's really cool that the the 4 and 5 color deck is not a green deck in this format. It's a like a black red deck.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It's, you know, when you're a kid and you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, you think about going into the darkness, right? Like going into the blacky ink that is the room that you haven't seen yet. And black is such a good color representation for that in this game. And I'm you can't see me right now because we're having internet connection problems and we're off camera, but like I'm beaming. Like I feel like this is such a win. And if anyone is looking to get someone into Magic, this almost feels like, I don't want to say it feels like Alpha because I've never played Alpha, but like, man, this is probably the best core set they've ever made, like outside of
that. This really captures. So there was, I don't know how much Magic you were playing when Magic 2010 came out and they reimagined the core set. And instead of the core set being a reprint set, it was going to be.
I played that set more. Yeah, I liked that set
more too. Like what Alpha and Beta were, right? So they said we're going to make more iconic cards. It's going to be okay to print new cards here. That was the first time they printed like Baneslayer Angel, and like that literally like Baneslayer Angel is now what we call like big fat fatties, right?
Yep.
It is like it inspired like this whole terminology, and it felt so like resonant. I remember just playing the game. I just remember playing Magic when Core Set 2010 came out, and it was kind of a miserable standard. Like that was the 5-color control format. But the drafts were, it felt special. And like I'm sitting here and I'm playing Adventures in the Forgotten Realms.
Lightning Limited. Bolt was in that set, right?
Lightning Bolt was also in that set, yeah. So I'm sitting here and I'm drafting again. And that's where like my emotions kind of get brought back to, is like that same kind of feeling. Like it feels like what I am playing right now is very special.
Even though it's not very powerful, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. But I am having, like I said, there are not individual cards that feel so powerful that they kind of overshadow the set as a whole. You know, there's no Gear Hulks. There's no Titans.
Well, they have the uncommon dragons, and putting them at uncommon was a very good move, in my opinion.
But they're beatable. Like it's not like somebody's playing it like
they're beatable by design. The players are supposed to be able to beat the dragon in this game.
Exactly right. You don't feel like your opponent's playing Grave Titan,
right?
And where you're just like, oh my god, like they got 2/2s, they attacked with it, they got 2 more 2/2s. Like how can I possibly?
That's what I love so much about the experience I've had, is that the monsters are able to be beat. And a lot of this format so far feels like it's up to me as the player to make the correct decision. And I do not feel that.
It feels very core set-y, and like it's there. A lot of it has, a lot of it kind of boils down to just making good attacks and blocks and sequencing your cards correctly.
Right. I could see myself stashing away a couple boxes of this because it feels like such a good game night for when my daughter can learn how to play this game, you know?
Yeah. I have made a, they've hit it out of the park with these past few limited formats. I wasn't crazy about Ikoria. I wasn't crazy about Strixhaven.
Oh, Strixhaven. I was going to ask you, are you going to miss Strixhaven? I actually liked it quite a bit.
Am I going to miss it? I feel like it got really repetitive at the end. So it was really interesting. But so much of, I feel like whether or not your deck boiled down was good, ended up like revolving around, like, did you get environmental sciences? Did you get, you know, did you get one of each of the summonings that you can cast.
Right.
There was a lot of tutoring, and I felt like it made the games. It wasn't incredibly repetitive because you had to spend picks on your lesson and learn cards. So that was interesting. It was definitely really skill testing, but like playing in the more I played, the more I felt like it was really monotonous.
Well, you're playing it frequently.
White and red, like, yeah. White and red and black and green were also really sucked.
You have to think about. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I felt like
we can't see each other. It's hard.
Yeah. I felt like if you weren't drafting teamer, like good stuff or black white aggro, your deck was just bad.
I think. You know, maybe I'm nostalgic because I got to play in a paper tournament this weekend, but I think about the way they designed Strixhaven. I think about the way they've designed Forgotten Realms. These cards, these sets played in a traditional setting, which is you're hanging out with your friends and you're just playing maybe once a month, are going to be so, so great looking back, right? Like, I feel like over time, if you could only play Strixhaven 5 times ever, because that's you know how long it was in the format, you could only get with your buddies 5 times a month, or five, you know what I mean, anyway.
Sure.
That's not gonna be a thing, right? You're talking about it from a competitive standpoint. I know we're called Forcing Spike. I'm talking about from a board game perspective, like kitchen table magic, basically. These have been home runs. These have been absolute home runs.
They have been really good. The play has been great. And I think there is a chance I need to play more of it because I'm still kind of enamored by all of like the fun. But you know, in a week or two, if I'm still like clamoring to draft this set, like we'll know that kind of like we have an all-timer. Whereas Strixhaven, like after 3 or 4 weeks, I was just like, I just kind of stopped like drafting.
Yeah.
I was like super, super on it. And then I was just like, I kind of got bored.
You know, I haven't had this kind of reaction to a limited environment since Dominaria. And I know that there's probably
Dominaria was so, I drafted a lot of Dominaria.
I still do. Every time it's available on Arena, I like queue up at least one draft.
It
might be nostalgia though, right? Like it might be nostalgia.
That's it, right.
So
that's fine. I'm a sucker.
You're a whale.
You know, whale. Like, I don't know what kind of whale I am, but I'm a whale. It is, if this ends up being, if I end up drafting this, like I drafted Dominaria, which was like unending, we will know that we have an all timer on our hands, or at least I'll feel like I have an all timer on my hands and I'll probably make another draft cube.
I think
I'm going to have to start getting pickier with my draft cubes though, because I have a few now.
What do you have for your cubes?
I have, an Ultimate Masters draft cube. Mm. Which was the like all the cards we grew up playing. If you and I, you know, hang out someday,
if we ever see each other again.
Yeah. I have a Modern Horizons 1 draft cube. That was a limited that was just very near and dear to my heart. I have a Dominaria draft cube.
Nice.
And I have a Time Spiral Remastered draft cube.
Okay. Oh, we played a lot of that when we were kids.
God, Time Spiral was great.
Yeah, we played a lot of that format.
Oh, man. I mean, that was when you and I were just like that was when we went to our first big tournaments. That was just big for us. Time Spiral Block was very meaningful.
Yep. I think the virtue of not having the oppressive top end in this format is giving it points in the all-timer category.
Yeah, there's no glory bringers, right? There's no cards where your opponent plays that and you're just like, oh my god, I can't beat that.
Yeah, anyone thinking about this set from a constructive perspective is probably frustrated. I understand that.
Oh, but it is. Yeah. So one of the things that's frustrating is that it is a pretty weak set. I feel like everything is pretty weak in the context of like, oh my God, I feel like we've been playing with Throne of Eldraine forever, right? I'm sure everybody is sick of Throne of Eldraine.
I'll probably become a standard player again when it's gone. And I like it. Like, that's, don't get me wrong, I actually like Throne of Eldraine. I'm just a little bored with how powerful it was, like, right now.
That's the thing is, like, we've been seeing Throne of Eldraine cards in the top decks, like, for 2 years. And I'm just like, whew, yeah, I'm over it. Like, I am ready for something else. That was not the most powerful Magic has ever been. You know, it was not like Urza Block levels of overpowered.
One of the most powerful sets I've seen in my time.
Yeah, it is the most powerful Magic I've seen since like Mirrodin Block.
Yeah, it turns out Adventure as a mechanic is very good. Like drawing a card that's a creature every time you play a spell is good. Like, I don't know. Like, okay.
Yeah, so when you're I really feel like the modal double face cards did it a lot better because you have to pick, right? Like, yeah. Oh, do I want my spell or my creature? Do I want my land or my creature? Adventure was a little too good. You just always got both.
I'm with you.
I'm just ready to be done with it.
All right. I'm very happy today. Like, this is just, I played a lot of Magic this weekend in paper and on Arena.
You've had a great weekend.
And I'm looking forward to getting off the phone, eating my homemade spaghetti and firing up another draft. Like, this is just so much fun. I'm having a great time with this set.
That's awesome.
Yep.
I started that draft before we got the show started here, and I'm going to finish it before I go to bed because my first patient isn't actually until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Great.
And I don't have a run in the morning, so I'm going to give myself a little sleep in.
There you go. Well, do you want to close this out so you can get to it?
Yeah, we'll call it here. Thanks for listening, guys. This is I'm seeing like the light at the end of the tunnel that was the year and a half we couldn't play Magic.
Yeah.
If you're still with us, we appreciate it.
Yeah, all 200 of you that stuck with us. We had 600 listeners before the COVID happened.
I know.
And then we got 200 that stuck with us. So thank you all.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. And, you know, tell your friends about us. We should be getting more meaningful content. Geez, now that we can play Magic again. Thanks for listening. I'm Justin Sherman. This is Chris Dunn. We're Forcing Spike, and we're signing off.